happy whatever day you're listening to this, Powerline listeners.
You were going
to
say hump day, weren't you?
I was going to say hump day, dude. This is Zach, and I'm here with Christian. And when you're listening to this, it hopefully won't be hump day, because that would mean that you're like a week late to this episode, and a lot of the info will be irrelevant.
This is a timely podcast. You need to be listening when we release it. We're going to actually start removing episodes so that we don't have any cold takes, just to preserve ourselves.
Yes, it's basically like when you buy like farm fresh food, like you can put it in the freezer, but then you have to thaw it out and you really have to go looking for the information we're actually talking about. So it's not good. You have to listen to this within, please listen within 2 to 3 business days. That is our suggestion.
There's an expiration date for our podcast.
So happy you're here listening with us. It's hump day night, 10:01 p.m. coming off of the frozen frenzy, coming off of the awesome win against the Canes. And Christian and I just wanted to hop on and talk about the start of the Lightning's, or not the start, the middle of the Lightning's homestand, where we have gone 1-0-1 against Toronto and Carolina. Christian, I need a one-word reaction to our performance the last 2 games.
Okay. That's it. Just okay.
Okay. I'll take that. If you've been watching the games, I'll tell you what. Saturday night was a heartbreaker as a Bolts fan. It hit a little bit more potently, losing again to the Leafs, our playoff nemesis from last year. So the Lightning lost their 4th straight home game against the Leafs in overtime. A heartbreaker 4-3 loss. They went up 3-1 early in the first period. Had Ilya Samsonov pulled after just 4 shots against. It looked like a clean sweep game, and the Bolts crapped the bed. Happily, they pulled out 1 point. Looking at it now, it's nice to see that we managed to snuff that out against a divisional rival. But coming into the game yesterday, we did not know what to expect, and the Lightning put on a clinic for the Frozen Frenzy game on Tuesday night. Posting a 3-0 shutout against Carolina Hurricanes, a team that, if you've been following in the media, has been struggling a good bit in terms of goaltending and offensive production. And we got a firsthand look at it. They struggled, to be frank with you.
And when you say the media, I think you mean us, because we said that the Canes had bad goaltending going in. So I just want to say, I think we were right. That was a nice, warm cookie take. That's going to be framed. That's going to be placed. It's going to make it onto ESPN. It's going to be, that's the take I want to go with.
Wow. Well, you know, hopefully one day our takes make it on ESPN. We actually had a cool moment, though, yesterday during the Frozen Frenzy broadcast. Not sure if all you guys were tuned in. On ESPN2, the NHL debuted an awesome new programming bit that they're doing a couple times this 23-24 season, where they're basically kind of copying the NFL Red Zone program, which I had never watched before. I honestly didn't really understand it until like 2 weeks ago. But they had this whole 8-hour special, staggered game times. If you tuned into that broadcast on ESPN Plus and ESPN 2, you were able to watch back and forth as the broadcast would switch in between games, as teams would go on the power play, as goals were scored, as big saves happened. It was a broadcast of epic proportions, very fun from the viewer experience. And we were very happy to get a little shout out from the man, John Buchacross. We posted a little hashtag Powerline Parm before the game, enjoying a good chicken parm.
You've got to explain that. Thank you.
We're going niche into the ESPN lore. So the event was hosted by John Buchacross and Kevin Weeks. Kevin Weeks, NHL alum, goaltender. Everyone kind of knows Weeksy. Buchacross, he's been an ESPN personality for a couple decades now. Big hockey guy, big Twitter guy, and he loves chicken parm. So the way that that dude Portnoy from Barstool goes around and reviews pizza, Buchacross kind of has the lock on chicken parm. And before the game, my wife was like, you know, I'm going to make you a nice chicken parm tonight, honey. She didn't even know this Twitter lore. She didn't know this whole deal was going on. And I was like,
shout out the wife.
I know. Shout out Bailey. But she had no idea what was going on. I hear this magical 2 words, chicken parm, and I say, this has to go on the Twitter. or a desk on the X, excuse me. And we put it up on X and I fell asleep, honestly. It was during like the 11 o'clock Eastern block of time when they showed it, but they did a little bit where they gave P.K. Subban came out and gave John and Kevin some chicken parm, and they put the old power line up on the screen. So big shout out to P.K., Weeksy, Bucci, power line collab that came out of nowhere. It was a very cool thing for us to see. Hopefully we're on there with some real takes one day, but I'm happy to start with the power line parm.
Every good story starts with chicken parmesan.
I couldn't have said it any better, bro.
So what are some things that you think we did well, Zach?
Yeah, looking at the game, I have to say it definitely did bring back a lot of PTSD. It felt like that final series clinching loss that we had against the Leafs last year. Namely, how commanding our lead was up front and just the fall off once we got that 2-goal margin. Cooch has looked incredible so far this year, and seeing him pot 2 more goals, get an assist, I believe, on the ABB goal, which broke the ice for him. I would be surprised this year if he does not put up at least 40 goals. And honestly, if he keeps shooting at the clip that he's at right now, there's not really any reason to believe that he couldn't hit 50. I feel like early on this season, I've seen him put more of an emphasis on shooting instead of being that pass-first player that has traditionally kind of irked a lot of Lightning fans, especially the casuals. And personally, I really hope that he sticks up with it. I think that his shot looks incredible right now. I think that the system we're playing is really allowing for him to be a threat on the power play the same way that Stamkos is. And I feel like, especially with Stamkos coming into this late career renaissance, people are putting more respect on him when he's on the ice, leaving Cooch more open. So I love seeing him capitalize on those 2 goals he got that night. Coming back to ABB, it was awesome to see him get that first goal. If you listen to the previous episode, Christian and I had some criticism about the utilization of him on that first line with Point and Cooch. The first game against Vancouver, it didn't really seem like there was a lot to sing his praises over, but something must have happened in practice in between now and then. He really actually seems to be fitting in well on that line the past 2 games. He's potted 2 goals in these 2 games since Vancouver. And we're just really happy for him. As much as it feels good to get some takes right sometimes and to kind of be able to identify flaws in the system before they come up, it's more fun to be proven wrong when it benefits the Bolts. So I love seeing ABB come up big and start to get his confidence back. When he scored that goal, seeing the Selly, my man was so stoked. So hats off to ABB for that one. He gets some flowers, and yeah, I'm happy for him.
Do you think that Alex Barbelay is going to stay on the first line, or do you think this is more of an experiment from Coop? And maybe he's going to get sent back down as soon as one of our other guys gets healthy.
I mean, Mott slotting back in is definitely going to be interesting. It sucks for someone to get injured so early in the year because you really start to build the bedrock around not having them. And it can cause big problems, especially for a player like Mott, who we would expect to play down in the depth. I don't see, as long as Barre Boulet keeps his counting stat production up, assists, goals, points, total. I don't see any reason for them to take him off now because they haven't seen him really have any sustained success. And granted, 2 games is a low bar for sustained success, but we haven't really seen him click like this yet. We haven't seen him look as confident as he skated the past 2 games. So I think as long as that continues, Coop's type of coach to reward that sort of play. But it'll be interesting to see what happens when Mott comes back. I'm curious what it's going to mean to be frank for Marilla. He's played well. He's been chippy. But the counting stat production hasn't been there. And I think that Mott adds more of a finishing touch compared to Marula just kind of being a thorn in other players' sides. So it'll be interesting. I don't think Barre Boulet has anything to worry about right now, as long as he keeps it up. It's so clear that the Lightning staff, the Lightning management, the people on the team behind closed doors see something in him that clearly fans like you and I, and honestly a lot of other people, have not seen just from watching the game. So curious to see the direction of the experiment. I don't see him going anywhere right now, though.
I think one thing that was a good thing about Jonas Johansson that night was that he did a pretty good job. He actually faced 52 shots against, and he saved 48 of them, which 48 saves is a monstrous number already. And letting in four goals is definitely tough, but this is just the case of Jonas is holding up his end of the bargain here. He's saying, okay, I'm being the starting goaltender that you basically need, and you're letting in 52 shots against me. And he came away with a .923 save percentage. And that's really all we can ask of him right now.
Yeah, looking at his stats, I mean, he faced the 52 shots against. And what impressed me a lot is that he kept the Bolts in the game really until that third period, when there was hardly any sustained defensive time for Tampa. You see Knies and Tavares really get clicking in that third period. And what we talked about in the last episode about the key to success for the Lightning at this point in time is going to be insulating JoJo, keeping him away from high danger chances. At the end of the day, you said it really well. The Lightning didn't hold up their end of the bargain. And against 52 shots, you can't really, like, you can't expect much more of him than what he provided. So I give him all the flowers, especially looking at how he responded in the next game. One thing that people often criticize him about at previous stops, especially when he was in Buffalo, is just that there was a really big lack of consistency from night to night. And it was a real like Jekyll and Hyde type case, where if he started to fall off the wagon, typically he's not recovering well. What I feel like I saw a lot in that Leafs game, and even in some of the other games this season, like the Vancouver game when they scored those two goals in the first minute of the second period, he has been very mentally dialed in. And whether or not that is credit to our coaching staff and something new he's doing with goalie coaches, or just the way that the defensive core and the players on the ice are interacting with him, he clearly has found a new level to the mental side of his game. And I have tons of respect for that, seeing how he held it together as he was getting peppered in that Toronto game, and especially how he responded in the Carolina game. So JoJo was certainly the bright spot in what ended up being a tough game for the Bolts, even considering the first period was so good. That first period is the type of hockey we want to play.
Very obviously, the game was frustrating because we lost. And we really lost it right at the end, just that last moment where we choked it away. It was pretty frustrating in the 3v3 overtime just to see how we played. And I feel like there were certain players that really didn't, like, they just made silly mistakes.
It's tough looking at how strong the Lightning 3v3 system used to be just a couple of years ago. And now, especially through the last playoffs, how much it seems to have fallen off. One thing big is the Lightning lost that opening faceoff in the 3v3 overtime. And it feels like from there, although we had moments where we had shots on goals and had opportunities, we never really gained control once we lost that faceoff. So that, I think, was a key point of it. And then a big thing that Christian and I both saw in a little bit of tape that we want to discuss was just the timidness we have and how we regrouped in the 3v3 overtime. And there's a point where Hedman had a really good opportunity to get up in the zone. The Toronto unit that was out had been on the ice for longer than they should have been. And you could tell they're clearly pretty gassed. And instead of trying to take a stab at it, wow, there was these players on the ice who were clearly pretty winded. Hedman regrouped way deep in the zone, was trying to find just a longer pass for Kucherov or Point or whoever it was out there with him. And instead of that working out, Toronto got a change. They were able to be a little bit more aggressive on the puck once we tried to cycle it into the zone. And as a result, they got that that odd man rush for Tavares to score the winning goal because we were too timid. And at that point, by the time they got the puck down there, we were too tired because we had now been on the ice for too long. So I don't love right now how timid we are. I know that the Lightning spent an extended amount of time in practice on Monday working on 3v3 full length ice drills, which is a rare card for coaches to pull out in the middle of the season. I'm very curious to see where it goes from here. I think that there's opportunity to bring in guys kind of like Marilla, kind of like Janot, kind of like Paul, to really help push the pace on those 3v3 overtimes. I'm not sure what Cirelli's ice time was on that, if he got any time during the 3v3, but I'd love to see a guy like him out there, knowing how strong he is defensively, but also how solid on his own he is as a finisher. So there was certainly a lot of things to look at and to nitpick with that 3-on-3 overtime. Hedman really being the big story there, but looking back at it now in hindsight, I'm glad we got that point out, even though we did choke it. And hopefully it's a well-timed lesson to get this crapper out early in the season, to see that we don't want to be this team and know that we got a couple more games against the Leafs that we can get revenge on.
I felt like our aggressiveness came back in the Carolina game. And just, I mean, the three goals that we were able to achieve and just like the way we scored them, just incredible. Braden Point netted one in. Alex Barry-Boulet got his first goal. Nick Paul almost got a Gordie Howe hat trick. Stuff is crazy, man. I mean, Zach, I hope you were wearing your Nick Paul jersey that night because he deserved it.
Dude, it was one of the rare games at home I watched where I just threw on the hoodie and not the Nicky Paul jersey. And
oh, man.
I felt a little bit of remorse after. But all that to say, the dude crushed. I'm proud of you for knowing the Gordie Howe hat trick as a newer hockey fan. That's kind of a deep cut there.
He got a Gordie Howe hat trick, if correct me if I'm wrong, is a goal, a fight, and an assist.
Ding, 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 ding.
Okay, good, good. I feel good about myself. That's one of those games where I feel like that's what Lightning hockey is supposed to be. We get a goal from one of our expected performers, Braden Point. We get a goal from one of our solid middle six players, Nick Paul. And our depth comes in with something too, almost like we weren't expecting it, but it really helped to seal the deal with Alex Barry-Boulet's goal. Jonas Johansson gets the shutout, which I can't believe that's the second shutout of his career. Did he already get one this season?
I want to say he got one in Colorado, or he spent so much time in Buffalo. It was probably in Buffalo, but he was good in Colorado. So it might've been in Colorado. He's gotten one before though.
I think something that contributed to that was that we only faced 32 shots against. Like, that is the kind of defense. Obviously, that's like still like, okay, I think 32 is 32. But just getting out of the previous game zone of 52, I mean, that's already an improvement. And I really am happy to see that.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said earlier that we played so aggressive during this game, because I think that that was a really big piece in it. It didn't feel like we were giving up as much ground in the neutral zone. Especially seeing the way that Toronto plays defense versus the way that Carolina plays defense. Carolina will kind of let you get into the zone and then try to trap you once you're there. And I would say we did a good job of making fast plays, of being, like we said, very aggressive on the forecheck and our zone entries. And it paid off. I think that the Barry-Boulet goal is a great example of that, where he's coming in so hot, he ends up passing Kachetkov that looked like for a second, I like screamed mentally because I was like, he's going to do a freaking rebound off the back. And then he gets this almost like, it was like a freaking beautiful luck pass to Radish. Radish finds him again with the tip. It was just a messy, aggressive play that a defense like Carolina's is just like helpless against with how structured they are. So I loved seeing that. I loved seeing Paul be able to bury one again. He's been so good this year. I love that he's getting rewarded on the scoreboard as well. And then seeing him fight after the fact, them having the scrum after the goal, and then him also getting into another little fisticuff. Dude is just, he's bringing it this year. There's some kind of chip on his shoulder right now. Yeah, so seeing Nicky come up with that goal, seeing Braden just get the monkey off his back, and we know how he is when he gets the monkey off his back. He is a streaky goal scorer.
What does that mean?
You ever heard the phrase monkey off your back? What? It's like when you have like a cloud looming over you. You're like, you're in a bad spell. Monkey on your back.
Dude, seeing Braden Point have a chimpanzee on top of him and him finally removing it.
Braden chucked the chimp. And he's a streaky goal scorer. So if I was a gambling man, I would be hitting the Braden Point anytime goal scorer prop these next couple games, especially seeing that lineup. We'll talk about that more in the road ahead. But seeing him get that goal, I think that they're going to come in bunches now. So I love that Carolina game. I love what it meant bouncing back from the tragic loss against Toronto. And this was an exciting 1-0-1 stretch for us. I got to give it up. A fun two games for the Bolts. Tapping into our normally scheduled programming, we're going to go now to our shooting star segment. And there's a pretty obvious answer for this week's shooting star. It's going to that boy, Yo-Yo Jonas Johansson. The dude absolutely crushed, held the team in the game against Toronto, pitched the shutout against the Hurricanes. Over the past two games, he's had a .953 save percentage. So factoring in the shutout and the 48 save performance against Toronto, just insane numbers for a goalie that we were not ready to hang our hat on at the beginning of the year. So many of us probably had other takes coming into the season. He's been excellent. Like I said earlier, his attitude is just locked in. You can tell that he's not letting the spotlight shine too bright into his eyes. He's keeping it dialed in. He is owning his moment. And you and I had this little conversation over text yesterday, Chris. As of right now, it's the way too early awards, but I think 6-7 games into the season, Jonas Johansson might be the best value goalie in the NHL.
Oh my gosh.
On his league minimum contract.
Zach, you're so right, and I found some stats to help us. So CapFriendly has this incredible little tool where they tell you how much each team is spending on different positions. So for instance, in like forwards, we are currently spending $47 million. That's 50%. And I'm pretty sure that kind of accounts for LTIR or anything like that. Well, I'd love to tell you that in the goalie section, we are spending the least out of any team in the NHL because both of our goalies are on league minimum contracts and we are spending only 1.7% of our cap space on goaltending.
You telling me that the lowest spenders for goaltending this year just pitched a .953 save percentage in the last two games? Is this what you're saying to me right now? Is this the ramifications of that statement?
I would tell you that, dude. That is exactly what I would tell you. And obviously that number's not going to stay the same. When Vasilevsky returns, it's not going to stay the same, which is okay. Because Vasilevsky is going to continue, hopefully, that like nice .92 average area. But honestly, like, this is what we needed. We need our goaltenders to stay strong. And they are kicking butt in terms of being a great value for us. I forget Mike Smith. forget Alex Leon, forget the guys we were talking about at the beginning of the year. We didn't need any of those guys. I like the guys that we have, and I'm honestly really happy that we basically showed some confidence in our existing people. Even Matt Tompkins, and I don't even know when he's going to play a game again. We need to give Jonas a break. So whenever Tompkins comes back in, we'll see how our goaltending continues to stack up. But for right now, I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I would expect to see the Tomcat tomorrow facing off against the Sharks. That's a good game for him to get his feet wet again. Thinking about Yo-Yo, something that I love so much too, that you said, sticking Breezeball's decision to stick with Jonas through this early part of the season, especially with the fact that we have Jonas locked up on another year next season at the league minimum, we are going to turn this goalie that every other team rejected into a bona fide number two. And I think, honestly, as Vasilevsky enters into a part of his career where the 60-game workload gets harder and harder, I honestly could see, if he continues on this trajectory, Yo-Yo being a solid, calling it a 1A, 1B is a little bit maybe strong. I think that Vasi could still start 55 games a year or so. But I think we could see a situation where next year to load manage Vasi, he gets 50 starts, Yo-Yo gets 30 or so. And we're at the point where we have an incredible tandem if Jonas can continue to play this way as his reps get pulled back. So I love this. This is a shooting star win for Yo-Yo. This is a shooting star win for Breezeball. This is a shooting star win for the whole goaltending coaching staff. This is happening. This is the year of the Yo-Yo.
So coming up on the black hole, I share my opinion with Zach on who I thought the black hole was, and he was pretty surprised. So you guys may be able to experience the first power line debate about if this player is really failing their expectations or if they're doing just fine. So I presented to Zach earlier that there's a player who has played all 7 games and is a forward and could have done something, yet has produced no goals, no assists, and only 3 shots on goal. And that player is Luke Glendening. Look, is he a bottom line center? Is he a third or fourth line center? Sure. Does he need to do something in 7 games? Not necessarily, but it's just frustrating to me. And I feel like with some of the things that some of our other third, fourth line guys have been able to do, I don't know why Glendening hasn't been in the mix for that. And it's disappointing to me. I sound sad. I'm like Luke, please.
You sound like you're his dad or something. Like you watched him, like you took him to practice and you're like, Luke, you got more in you, buddy. You got more in you.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, Luke.
So I do not think that Luke deserves a smoke this week. To be totally transparent with you guys, we were going to go ahead and give this award back to Serkey. But I feel personally that although he kind of does deserve it, it was only -1 over the weekend. So it is what it is. Looking at Glendening though, here's a couple things I have to defend him. So first off, he's playing with Sheary and Asamont. If you're looking at the rest of that line, I think Asamont has the only goal on that line and Sheary has an assist, which is off of Asamont's goal. Glendening couldn't be involved in that play for whatever reason. And so what, he's the odd man out. He's only behind the rest of the line 1 point in terms of counting stats. So I think that's worth considering. To be frank with you, it seems like so far Sheary and Glendening haven't found their spot yet in the Lightning system. What I like about Glendening at this point, though, is if we're having a face-off in the neutral zone or in the defensive zone, I definitely feel more confident seeing Glendening line up to take those draws than I am with a lot of other players. So even though we haven't seen him produce as much with the counting stats, What I have found important with him is that he's currently at about a 60% clip in the faceoff circle. And especially when we look at situations like what happened in the Toronto game where we couldn't get that faceoff win in overtime and then we're in between a rock and a hard place. I have noticed multiple times this season where I felt very comfortable if we were having a defensive zone faceoff and the fourth unit was out there, because I feel like Glendening is competent enough defensively. He's only in a -2 through those 7 games played, and he's been a stallion in the faceoff circle. He's been excellent there. In terms of counting stats, he's never really been that type of guy to put up a bunch of numbers. His highest point season in his like 10-year career now has been 23 with the Wings back in 18-19. I fully expect him to get to the teens probably in terms of points as the year goes on. But right now, I'm impressed with his defensive game. I'm happy with his faceoff performance. That's what I expect from my fourth line center. So I don't think Glendening belongs under the bus. I understand from a counting perspective where you're at, but I've liked him, and he's got a cool vibe to him, dude. Look at he doesn't have teeth. Like this dude, this is a hockey guy. You want the hockey guy on your team.
Teethless people deserve some grace here, apparently, for not getting counting stats.
So we're going to put this in the survey portion of the podcast, at least on Spotify. And we want you guys to chip in here. Is Glendening underperforming? You got to let us know. Please answer the poll.
I hear you. I know Luke does a lot of stuff that's not goals and assists. I don't know if like you can be a forward in this league and not get something in 7 games. And people are like, you know, so happy that you're there.
Nah, I don't know about that, dude. This is the real live debate. This is what it's like having a conversation with you and me in real life. Nah, I disagree.
Who's a player that has a big impact that does nothing in 7 games counting stats wise? Who are you going to say like, oh, look at this guy? Who's your example?
Gosh, okay. You might have me there. I don't know, man. I'm happy with where he's at. Do I think that he's been the best? No. I would like to see some more point production. And this comes back to what we talked about last episode too. I wish we kept Perry.
Yeah.
Because Perry's the type of guy that I put on, strong defensive player. He will find a way to score. I think that hopefully as Asamoah continues to develop, maybe he can fill that role as just the pest on the fourth line, potentially putting up maybe 10 teens goals. I think he's got it, especially after that shot he got with Vancouver. But Glendening's not doing bad. If I'm going to be critical, and this take's not going to sit well with you, we maybe don't have to get this intense in front of the pod family, but I think if anyone has been disappointing this year, it might be Marilla.
He's a rookie, though.
I know, but if we're looking at objectively, I think that Glendening is more central to that fourth line than Marilla is to his line. Marilla complements Paul and Janot really well, especially when he was playing with them. He's not playing with them anymore. But if you took Marilla off of that line and you took Glendening off the fourth line and you said which line's going to struggle more because of this, I think Glendening makes a bigger difference. So that's my take. That is not meant for Marilla to catch a stray, because I think he's been really good. And although I think he's going to probably be moved off the team when Mott returns, and I think that'll be good for him. Granted, I think he'll benefit from more time playing in the U.S. system in Syracuse. But I think if we're just going to be objective, I'm happy with Marilla. I'm happy with Glendening. Right now, I would say the more underwhelming player with no points is Marilla. But what would you expect at this point? He shouldn't have even, like, he wasn't supposed to make the team, so... Like, right now, I think that we're okay. Nobody was definitively bad these last 2 games.
So, we'll talk about the road ahead. We've got 2 games coming up, and we'll probably be able to record after those 2 games and give you a little bit of a rundown. But for right now, we're about to face two teams that should give us a little bit more room to breathe, should, quotation marks, that the San Jose Sharks and the Seattle Kraken have not been doing very well in our league currently. And I don't think we should expect, we definitely won't expect the San Jose Sharks to make a jump. And I don't think we'll expect the Kraken to make a huge jump either.
Yeah, looking at the Sharks, man, that's a team that needs to tank. They need to just, they need to burn it down. And looking at like that game tomorrow night, Thursday, I'm very hopeful that we're going to walk away with two more points after that, get our fourth win on the year. Mackenzie Blackwood has been a really bright spot for them. If there's anywhere where they might have the chance to keep us at bay a bit, it would be in the Blackwood-Tompkins matchup. Tompkins hasn't played in...
been a few games, yeah.
Almost a week now. Yeah, so Tompkins might be coming in a little cold. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts to those first couple plays against San Jose tomorrow night. And Blackwood has played above expectation in quite a few games for San Jose so far. So that'll be interesting. Anthony Duclair on the Sharks, the player I always love to watch when he was with the Panthers. And I'm curious to see what impact he maybe makes for them tomorrow night. But I think that Money Puck had that game at a 70% win chance for us.
Yeah, I got that information from Data Driven Hockey. That we had a 70% chance of beating the Sharks and a 56% chance of beating the Kraken. The only bright spot for the Sharks right now is their goaltending. Looking at Data Driven Hockey, they're ranking 31 out of 32, 32 out of 32, 29 out of 32 in stuff like goal scoring, chance creation, finishing, chance suppression. And Data Driven has these incredible stats to figure that stuff out. So I'm just going to trust them here. But their goaltending is 13. Out of 32. So clearly Mackenzie Blackwood is doing something.
Whoa, I did not realize it was that good. That's crazy.
Goaltending's above average in San Jose, which clearly isn't helping them very much because they're at literally the bottom with zero wins, looking for their first win still of the year. I think they're the only team that hasn't won yet. Yep, they're the only team that hasn't won. And I would like to, I feel bad for them, but I would like to keep them from winning.
My wish for the Sharks this year is Macklin Celebrini in May of 2024, or July of 2024, excuse me. I want them to get Celebrini. I want them to be at the bottom of the barrel. And tomorrow I hope to contribute to that campaign. So feeling good about this game against the Sharks. I'm going to probably book that right now is a W. Hope I don't get exposed on that tank. It'll really take something for that to happen, but I feel good about that. And then we're face off against the Kraken later this weekend, right?
So I'm looking at the Data Driven Hockey standings as well as the real NHL standings right now. And they're pretty similar. There are a few minor differences. The real standings right now is that the Kraken are at 5 points, which they're also sharing that position with like the Calgary Flames, the Capitals, and the Blues, and the Islanders. Islanders and Blues have only played 5 games versus the Kraken 7. But basically, Kraken off to a very bad start. Data Driven Hockey has their power ranking based on more deep stats at number 29. So although we have a slightly lower chance of beating them, it's still a good game for us to watch and to expect to win and expect our team to play right. I think it's honestly these kind of games where we can tell if our team is playing right or not. Because if we play a really good team, if we play the Vegas Golden Knights, like, okay, we could do our best and still get messed up. We could still get beat if we play the Golden Knights. I like playing against the worst teams and looking for those negative spots because it's like, okay, if the Kraken put up 3 goals against us in the first 2 periods, something's fishy with us. We are the problem here. It's not the Kraken are incredible. So, you know, the Kraken will pull out their goaltending, which I believe is actually worse than the Sharks.
The Kraken's is worse than the Sharks. So that's one of the big points this year, I think. That
a little bit worse. It's number 19.
Yeah, we'll have to take advantage of that. They've got the tandem of Philip Grubauer and Joey Decord. Grubauer was awesome last year in the playoffs. Stood on his head against Colorado and then turned into a bit of a pumpkin during the series with Dallas. This year he has returned to sub-average goaltending, and Joey DeCord having to carry the mail is a tough ask. I kind of blows me away that they call Martin Jones. That's a different story for a different day. One thing I've noticed about Seattle in the games they've played and what will be a key in us hopefully stealing 2 points against them is how we, again, defend and what it looks like for allowing them to get shots. In the games that they've won this year, they scored 5 and 7 goals. So when they get going, they can put up numbers. It's just that typically their goaltending's too leaky for them to score enough goals to win. So when we play against them, I'm hoping to see us really clamp down defensively. That's a fast team. That's a team that moves the puck well and scores by committee. So it's going to take a lot of effort from every single line. There's no time off. There's no shifts in that game where Seattle doesn't have a potential threat on the ice. So I'm hopeful to, like you said, Chris, see if we play properly that night, to see if we insulate whoever's in net well, and if we can expose Grubauer and DeCord for what they really are as goaltenders. And I think, again, this is another great chance for us to pull out 2 points that we need really desperately early in the season. And I would also feel good about this game, too. I think it'll be a fun one to watch. It could certainly be high scoring and probably a nice night to take the over. But I feel fairly confident.
Well, I think that's really it for today. We had our Leafs game that was a heartbreaker. We had our Canes game that was a heart fixer, a heart stopper.
Wow.
A showstopper. What, insert your favorite word in there?
The defibrillator.
It was a good game. And we're looking for a few more of those this year. Hopefully we'll see you at the Sharks and the Kraken coming into town this week. Thanks for listening as always, and
see you later.